is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
1225, our email address is nationradio at theteam1260.com. We're living in bizarro world this week. You know, I think it was the Germans who beat the Russians. Norway came back and made it close against Canada. And France is up 1-0 over the Americans at the World Hockey Championships. That's a little wacko, don't you think? I mean, I don't even know which of the Slovak countries are involved right now off the top of my head. Belarus or Slovakia. I know Czech is in there somewhere. But for France to have a 1-0 lead over any of the big nations at any time is, I guess it just goes to show you that hockey is truly international and everybody's coming along, and maybe in another 100 years or so, the Canadians will be looking to try to get into the medal round or something like that. Wow, that's crazy at the world. This has been wide open so far this year at the World Hockey Championships. Later on, we're going to be talking to Cam Moon, play-by-play voice of the Red Deer Rebels, also Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons. And we now welcome Derek Zona. Interesting articles all week for the Copper and Blue. Derek, how are you today?
Well, Alan, thank you for having me on. How about yourself?
Good. I'm glad to have you on, as always, but I particularly this week, because I find it difficult to find intelligent people who agree with me about Sean Couturier being the best player available at this year's draft, and you appear to be at least close to that or spot on with my way of thinking. Tell me why you like Sean Couturier so much.
It's interesting. Both Scott Reynolds, my co-editor, and I have Couturier as our top forward. I'm leaning towards Larson because I have an affinity for defensemen. But if I was going to go with the forward, it probably would be Couturier at this point. And the reason for that, he's a big center, already being relied on to take the lion's share of faceoffs for Drummondville. He's playing in all situations, heavy minutes on the penalty kill, and his even strength scoring has been outstanding. It's at the top of all the forward prospects in the CHL this year. Couturier has been up there with a couple of other names, but given his role and the minutes he's playing, and you know the fact that he's probably able to step in, if not right now, then probably next year into somewhat of a responsible role on the team. I think he's the guy. You know, I know there's a lot of love for Nugent Hopkins, and his upside or his ceiling is supposed to be, you know, phenomenal. But if you're looking for an all-zones player, somebody who can play in all situations and who's already being heavily, heavily relied upon as the go-to guy, it's Couturier.
When I've seen Couturier, I know his skating isn't, like, he's not a buzzsaw type. He's not Ryan Strome. But I don't think his skating doesn't look that plodding or Doug Wickenheiser-ish. A lot of people have said the reason he's falling, or the reason he's not quite number one overall caliber, is due to his skating. Do you think it's that big of an issue?
It's difficult because I don't get to see many Q games. In fact, I've seen more USHL games than I've seen Q games. And you know, but from the brief time that I've been able to see him, he hasn't looked that far out of place with some of the other top CHL players, especially at the World Juniors. He didn't blow anybody away, but he was the only draft eligible player on the Canadian team. And in the time that I've seen him, he's not lagging behind. He's not trying to catch up. He may not be, like you said, he may not be explosive. I certainly don't think he's got the skating ability or the explosiveness of Taylor Hall, but I don't think it's going to be one of those things that holds him back. Kind of reminds me, his skating stride, and he's got the gait. It kind of reminds me of Joe Thornton, his skating stride. Big, long, loping strides that get him where he needs to go, but you know he's not going to blow by you and like Taylor Hall might, and you know, into open ice in the blink of an eye.
He also has a lot of skills, I think, that work offensively and defensively. He's got a big wingspan. He's a nice passer. He can interrupt the play because of his size. Do you feel like he's a guy who's maybe more or less NHL-ready than somebody like Larson or Nugent Hopkins?
Right now, I think, and from everything I've read, he's probably the most NHL-ready. Either he or Landeskog, the big Swede. But you're right. His size and the position that Drummondville put him in this year has it leads to a player who can probably play some role. You know, he might not be a top-line guy for you yet, but he will play some role. And while people are focused on his passing, he is a scorer. And it's interesting because the Q actually, they track a stat called dangerous shots. They're the only CHL league that does this. And it's kind of equivalent to what Dennis King is doing at Tyler Dello's site, tracking scoring chances. And Couturier was right there at the very, very top of the league for all players in dangerous shots and dangerous shots per game. So he's getting himself into scoring areas, and he's taking a number of high-quality shots, getting into the right areas to score goals. So he's not just a great passer. He does have a goal scorer's knack and the ability to position himself to impact the game with goals, too.
I was talking to Jonathan Willis about Couturier versus Nugent Hopkins two or three weeks ago, and I was trying to come up with a name of somebody who, in the past, NHL history's past, who has scored at the rate, power play ratio, even strength ratio of Nugent Hopkins, and also gone on to become a really good even strength player and impact player at the NHL level. And it's difficult. I know that we don't have like decades and decades of information because the NHL didn't keep track of all of that until maybe 79. But is there somebody out there that you can identify, or have you looked to see if there's somebody out there in the past who has Nugent Hopkins, numbers that becomes an impact player, a Joe Sakic, a Zetterberg, that sort of player?
It's interesting because Jonathan, as you know, has been doing a lot of work on this. Scott Reynolds has been doing a lot of work on this. And what we're finding is that there's very few comparables for guys who are, power play focused, power play centric players in junior, scoring the big ratio of points on the power play. They don't come to the NHL and start driving the play all of a sudden. There are, a couple of guys here and there, but they don't seem to match Nugent Hopkins' game or his other skills. And, if you're not, even strength time makes up, 75% of your time on the ice. If you're not driving a play at evens, you don't really have a chance to get onto the power play in most cases. There are special cases where guys are experts at the power play and get that opportunity. But in the NHL, if you want to make it, you've got to be able to drive the play at evens. You've got to be able to score at evens and set yourself up to get to the power play. And I have no doubt that Nugent Hopkins has a very, very high level of skill. Everybody who's seen him, everybody who has talked about him says it over and over again that he thinks he steps and steps ahead of the play. He makes everybody around him better with his passing ability, and he is a dominant power play player. But, if I'm looking for a franchise player, a franchise center with that first pick, if I've essentially given up another season to get that first pick, I want a guy who's going to be able to kill penalties. I want a guy who's going to be able to drive the play at evens, and I don't see that in Nugent Hopkins, and it may come, but I don't think it's there yet.
The most similar player I could find, by the way, was Sam Gagne, actually a power play. Now, obviously, he had Patrick Kane with him, but he definitely had a tremendous power play advantage in the OHL vis-a-vis even strength. And, he's a good hockey player, but I don't know whether you'd want another one as number one. This comes in from Rich Mellon. He asks, this is for you, Derek. I'd like his opinion on what he thinks of the Oilers' lines, what they should look like in the fall with a healthy Horkoff, Hall, Gagne, and Hemsky back. How would the mix and match top nine look in your opinion?
I don't know. They're, as has been the case for a couple of years now, Alan, you're well aware of this, they're still, four or five NHL players away from being a competitive playoff team. You have that the Eberle, Horkoff, Hall line, which seems like it should work for a while. Omark and Pajarvi worked so well together at the end of the season. They need a center, and the center that they get is obviously going to have to be a defensively aware guy who can play goal line to goal line and win faceoffs. And I don't know that guy is on the roster right now. It's Horkoff, but he's with Eberle and Hall. Hemsky. What do you do with him? I'm not sure. I still think they're they're pretty far away from being a competitive group. And I know you're pushing to have Hartikainen start the season in the NHL, maybe on the left wing, on the fourth line. They're still going to have to come up with a couple of centers who can play end-to-end and kill penalties and win face-offs and be responsible for all these high-flying wingers. So I can't even put a stake in, you know, what the Lions are going to look like right now.
What do you think it's advisable for the Oilers to move either Cogliano or Gagner off center for the fall, or make a decision on one of the two of them, because they, in the face-off circle, they're both subpar. They have different skills, but they are sort of clogging up the middle with mediocrity at a lot of different areas, including the face-off circle.
Yeah, it's interesting. When Gagner has good wingers, when Gagner was playing with say Penner and Hemsky, he was a really good center. The line was clicking, they were outscoring, outchancing, outshooting almost any line that was coming up against them. But when Gagner's the quality of his wingers fall off, his game tends to follow it down. It's obvious that he's not capable yet of driving the play by himself, and it's not to say he won't be. I remain very high on Gagner, but he needs quality wingers, and if you're going to put him out there with Hemsky, you're going to need a quality left winger on that line. Might it be Cogliano? I don't think so. I don't know if, and this is just a wild guess, but I don't know if both of them are going to be on Edmonton Oilers come October 1st.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there's going to be some movement in that middle area, and I think one or both of them may end up either moving to the wing or be gone. Were you surprised by Dustin Penner's? You wrote a great article on this on Copper and Blue this week about Dustin Penner's performance once he got it to L.A., and why do you think there was such a downward trend for him this year?
It was actually Scott who wrote that, but I think the conclusion was Terry Murray's system is not an easy one to learn, and I think Penner was kind of stuck learning a whole new system, which has chewed up even some of the brightest stars. Murray was hard after Drew Doughty this year for not having his head in it, for not being in shape at the beginning of the season, and I think Penner came in and struggled to learn what the Kings were doing, and he was still making an impact early on the power play, but then once Kopitar was injured, I think that there was nobody for Petter to lean on, and I think he's got a relatively steep learning curve this summer to figure out what the Kings are doing, but I don't think Kings fans should be worried. He's a proven commodity. You know what you're getting in him, and I think he'll be back. He'll be back in October and scoring 25 goals and assisting on 25 other goals.
I'm absolutely certain you wrote the Curtis Foster article on Copper and Blue this week, right?
The Curtis Foster, which one?
The one about the line that really caught me was the Oilers are going to need to manage his time if he's going to be successful. Was that you?
Yes.
Okay.
I did say that.
Yeah, and it struck me because I, and it's a very interesting article. I recommend everybody go and read it if you haven't. But it struck me that you could say that about every one of the Edmonton Oilers defensemen. It's like they have four second and four third pairing guys and Ryan Whitney. If you're the Edmonton Oilers management, if you're in the room and you're blue skying the fall, how many defensemen do you want to bring into this group right now? NHL defensemen.
You need, it is imperative that they bring, if they want. I don't know what the plan is, and I don't think any of us have kind of figured out what this plan is. They've talked 4 to 6 years. If there is, I don't think that they can go another year without being somewhat competitive and trying to get into the playoffs. I think that fans will finally, have enough of the long rebuild. But if they want to be competitive, there's no doubt that the number one thing that they have to bring in, I think number two is a center, but number one is they need a top-end defenseman, somebody who is capable of playing 22, 23 minutes a night, somebody who can come in and kill penalties, not necessarily play on the power play, but they need somebody who's going to be stout in his own end and play a game that complements either Gilbert or Whitney. And that has to be number one on the shopping list, on the priority list. After that, it would be really nice to bring in a bargain basement kind of, you know, $750,000 to $850,000 guy to just kill penalties. You know, just somebody on the back end that is experienced, understands the NHL penalty kill, and understands how to play against high-level power plays. But one, they definitely need a top-pairing guy or somebody who can imitate a top-pairing guy for maybe 60 games. And second is another penalty killer somewhere in the mix.
Final question before we move on to another subject. If they draft Larson, and I understand you're leaning that way, do you think it's best for him to spend another season in Sweden?
Yes, probably. However, you know, you look at Victor Hedman and how he's playing right now for Tampa Bay in the playoffs, how he finished the year. He was shaky early on, and I don't know if that was attributable to growing pains or learning Boucher's system, but he's right now he's their best defenseman. You know, they're leaning on Brewer to take a lot of the tough minutes and a lot of the tough matchups and the tough starts, but Hedman is playing heads and shoulders above really anybody in the East outside of Chara. And if Larson, you know, the comparable that I keep hearing to about Larson right now as far as visually and his game is Hedman. And if bringing him over now means you have Hedman next year, then, you know, maybe it's something you consider. You bring him over and you know, burn that first year of the entry level. I'd prefer to have him spend one more year in the SEL at Skellefteå to learn the craft a bit. But if he's playing 23 minutes a game in the playoffs, which, you know, he was leading his team in ice time, it's to the point where I think the argument last year for Taylor Hall is he has nothing left to prove in juniors. If you're an 18-year-old who's playing 23 minutes a game, leading your team in ice time in the playoffs, do you have much left to prove in the SEL?
Yeah, good point. Okay, couple real quick ones here, and then we're going to let you scoot. Of the young defenseman Edmonton signed or acquired deadline on, and I'll name them out here, Tubert, Montgomery, Fadun, Marinson, who do you think will have the biggest short-term and then long-term impact from that group?
Marinson, probably long-term. He really slowed down at the end of the year. And I don't know if it was an extended schedule or, you know, injuries racked up, you know, that he was racking up through the year. He's got all of the top end skills that you need to be a successful top pairing guy. He's not, you know, obviously a shutdown guy, but his first pass is excellent. He can get the puck out of the zone. And he can, you know, he can play the power play. He racked up a ton of power play points this year. And he's probably going to do the same thing at the next level. Short term, probably Montgomery.
Yeah, I agree.
The Barons are going to have, next year there's going to be a crunch with so many kids coming in. They're going to need to find veteran play and top level AHL play out of somebody who's not going to be a rugged old AHL veteran. And given Montgomery's run down the stretch and talking with Neil, our Oklahoma City writer, he's thinking also that Montgomery could be the guy to step up. He's still young and he still may have a couple of NHL seasons in him. But he looks like the guy that Oklahoma is going to have to, the Barons are going to have to rely on next year and to take up the slack for some of the veterans that aren't going to be around next year.
Great answer, and I agree with you totally. I think Montgomery's a guy who might actually jump past guys like Plante and may spend some time in the NHL. Okay, for forwards, Tanner House, Hunter Tremblay, Mark Arcobello, Tyler Pitlick, Curtis Hamilton, Cam Abney, Anton Lander. Same question, biggest short and then long-term impact on the team?
It's crazy to say this with all of the talent in there and all of the really well-known names in there. Mark Arcobello has come out of nowhere. And he's small. He doesn't skate as well as I think everybody on that list. But conversations I've had with Neil, the guy is the comparable that we've come up with is Andrew Brunette from the Wild. The guy slides into open space. He puts shots on. His shot rates are crazy. He puts shots on goal on a consistent basis when he's when he's not scoring points, it's not because he's not getting shots to the net. He keeps the goalie honest, and he's doing it from the place where you expect Andrew Brunette to pop up on the other side of the net. That's Arcobello for Oklahoma City. And if he keeps that up, he's going to make a career for, you know, he's going to make an impact, at least for Oklahoma City. I don't know if it'll be worth a cup of coffee. Long term, Curtis Hamilton is, you know, I know the talk right now is Lander and Pitlick because of the depth at the center position. But Curtis Hamilton is probably the guy that the Oilers are going to need to rely on. He's a penalty killer. He's a defensive player. He came out of that Lauren Malkin, what's the phrase he uses, from our end out or from our goal line out system. There's a boatload of offensive talent on the Oilers right now and in the system, as you well know. And somebody who can kill penalties and play a defensive role is probably going to have an opportunity to scoot by a number of those guys on the depth chart just by way of need, you know, roster need.
Derek, thanks so much for this. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Alan. Have a good day.
You too. Derek Zona from the Copper and Blue. Lots of fine writers there, and they do great work. If you like advanced stats and really want to look inside the game and have a long look at what the Edmonton Oilers are doing and some of these prospects are doing and scoring rates and that sort of thing, Copper and Blue is a must-stop every day. Now, it's 1-1 now, I believe, between the Americans and French at the World Hockey Championships. Coming up, we're going to talk about the top 10, how it's changed, and don't forget in the next half hour, Cam Moon, and we'll talk to Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons.